And we are live streaming. Okay, got it. Good afternoon, everybody. It is Angie Atkinson, and I'm here with the lovely and talented Lise Colucci. Lise, welcome back, and thanks for being here.
Thank you. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. So today we are talking about, let me mute myself here. Today we thought we would talk about what it takes to sort of let go of a narcissist when you don't really feel ready. Because sometimes we end up staying in relationships a little bit too long, a lot too long, some of us. And then when we're finally out, whether they discarded us or we left them, there ends up being this feeling like, I cannot let go. I cannot stop dealing with that person and, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. So this is something we're going to talk about. So before we get started, let me just remind you, hey, Jack, hey, Adrian, happy to have you guys here. Before we get started, let me just tell you a couple quick things. First of all, Lise is my partner over at queenbeeing.com. She has been filling in for Dana. We will be moving to Fridays next week because Dana will be coming back on Tuesday. So that's good news. Update on Dana that I promised you. Also, yes, I am doing well. Thank you. If you are interested in these streams, whether you would like to come to the streams we do together and the streams we do separately, either way, you can text Angie Live, all one word, to 33222. And or Lise Live, all one word, to 33222. And it's LISELIVE for Lise. All right. Everybody gets a little confused with her name sometimes. I don't know why.
Yes, they want it to be Lisa no matter what.
Yeah. That's right. So as we're getting started, I know there are some other things. Oh, Lise has a channel here on YouTube called Lise Colucci Narcissistic Abuse Recovery Support. You can click the link that I'll put below after the session is over. I should have done it already. All right, we are going to just jump right in and get going. So, Lise.
Yes.
What do you see with people when they feel stuck? What do you think it is that makes them feel stuck with a narcissist, even when they've been, you know, say getting some kind of support for a long time and they still don't quite feel ready to let go? What do you think causes that?
I think you just nailed it with the words, they don't feel ready. And I think that it's different for everybody. Each person has their own thing, but common things are sort of obsessing on narcissists in general. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, maybe going and listening to narcissists on YouTube talk about narcissism, or going on forums where there are narcissists and asking them questions. Feeling like the more and more knowledge they get from the mouth of the beast, so to speak, might give them the thing they need to let go. But in actuality, what's happening is you're re-traumatizing and re-trauma bonding yourself back to your own narcissist sometimes, right? Yeah. And other things are just the inability to accept that your life isn't going to be what you thought it was mm-hmm. going to be. So the future faking they created that then, or they started that then creates a hope. Letting go of hope. Yeah. So many things.
Yeah. It's tough. And I think, we kind of touched on future faking before we started here today. I think what I tend to see and what I've maybe even experienced a little bit of is, you know, you go through this, you plan your life, right? You go, and in this case, talking about specifically somebody you're in a relationship with, like a romantic relationship,
right?
But you plan your life and you think, okay, this is my person. This is who I'm going to be with. You know, you get married or you don't, whatever, you long-term commit to someone and you think you have things figured out. And then when stuff starts to fall apart and you start to realize, you know, at whatever stage you start to realize what's going on, because this can be very covert for years, even in some cases. I think for me, part of it was, I can't believe I failed, you know, in a marriage. And I think part of it was, you know, but we have a kid together. We had a life plan together, et cetera. So I think those things, which kind of in a way, you know, a little bit of future faking, well, maybe a lot went into that, but also those expectations, right? Where you feel like,
right.
You know, could I really have been that wrong? And I have people tell me they feel stupid. I have people tell me they feel, you know, even, right? Highly intelligent people. And it's, you know, So,
well, and when you have that, you have to grieve letting go of what you thought was real.
Right.
And that's hard to accept that there's two different realities going on.
Right. Yep. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think that's it. I like the way you put that, two different realities. Yeah. And so suddenly you realize that everything in your life has been, you know, you've been lied to. And I've seen this also with adult children of narcissists who realized it as adults. One in particular is sticking in my head. Her situation is extreme, right? But she's been like, she literally found out, and I'm not joking when I tell you that literally everything she believed to be true was wrong. Literally everything. Right down to how her mother died, and right down to who her father even was. It's a crazy situation. So my point is, her situation is extreme, but on some level, we've all experienced that feeling of, wait a minute, this wasn't what I thought it was. Mm-hmm. And so there's, what is it? It's like cognitive dissonance, right? Like you're told one thing, you believe this thing, and then you look and realize this is not what I believe to be true. Anyway. All right.
Yeah, that kind of reminds me of another thing, and that is people lose the sense of who they are, even without all that. But then when you add in all that, you lose a sense of who you are. So without the reaching back to the narcissist, and I'm talking people out beyond 6 months, beyond 8 months, not people newly out. I'm talking once the trauma bond for some people tends to fade and others it doesn't. And so those people, when they're struggling to get out, sometimes it is that, like, what did I say? The losing sense of who you are.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know I did that. I lost myself in a big way. And it's hard to come back around. It's hard to remember. But, and the other thing, and just let me just toss this in here while we're here. The other thing I think related to that is that not only do you lose yourself, but you might think, well, I want to get back to being who I was, right? But being who you were, it's not really possible, is it? Because, you know, even if it's only been a year since you've been that person, a year has gone by and you've changed and grown and had new experiences. But most of us, you know, we have children or we have grown 20 years older or whatever. And we're sitting here like, who are we supposed to be? You know, and in some ways that's the dark side of this stuff. But then if you look at it with a different pair of glasses, it can be the positive side, because you can now decide who you are from a new perspective.
And with different strength and with different awareness and maturity and emotional intelligence. This takes a lot of emotional intelligence to heal from. You grow up whether you like it or not.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Yes. Okay. Let's see here. So when it comes to letting go of a narcissist, what do you think for you? Well, hold on. Let me just say this. For me, this is what it is. I have found, I've talked a lot about writing the letter where you write that's kind of the end of it, right? Because what I have learned the hard way is that until you go through the part where you feel the emotions, and this is interesting because when I see somebody, someone I know in real life is going through a breakup right now, and I see this person doing a lot of emotional expression that I would not personally have done, and that I feel almost confused by.
You mean outward emotional expression?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, even publicly in some cases.
Okay.
And for me, I guess because of the trauma that I experienced, you know, I realized it. I was shamed for having extreme emotions in every relationship I've ever had.
Yeah.
So, growing up, and then not my friends as much, but people that I was in different, you know, my parents and then the people I was in different relationships with. So I think sometimes when I saw people having those extreme emotions publicly, I would feel like, okay. Right? And it was some conditioning, you know, that I had learned to feel ashamed myself of extreme emotions. And so I found a hard time. I had a hard time expressing them. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of survivors go through something similar. Now, not all of them, some of them continue to express, and that's probably way healthier. But for me, what I did was not express. And so I thought, I don't need to feel these things. And so I'm not going to. But what happens is, you know, because I learned about the law of attraction and all this stuff, and I learned that I could choose how I felt. And once I realized that, I was like, holy crap, this is so easy. But it's not, because you actually do have to let the feelings happen or they can't heal. Right.
Right.
So I think that's the first step. And that was my biggest mistake in healing, was not expressing my feelings soon enough or at all until later. So that's number one. And then number two, you know, I feel like you have to kind of set an end date on the mourning period, right? Mm-hmm. The grief period. But in that process, you have to allow yourself to go through all the stages of grief. And you have to allow yourself to, you know, you need to clean out your space, you know, get the things out that remind you of them, or move if you can or whatever. But also you have to learn how to take more control over your head. You know what I mean? You have to get busy. You have to do more things, take care of yourself. Self-care is huge, all that stuff. And there are lots of things you can do in the moment, but I think the issue is that trauma bonding doesn't always look like I want them back. And hoovering doesn't always look like I want them back. It sometimes looks like we have drama. We have arguments. We have things we need to get out of our, you know, off our chests or whatever. And then it turns into just more connection of an ugly nature, which still gives the narcissist supply and gives you misery. I'm totally off, but you get my point, right?
Yes. Well, so, the point is the indifference. If you can get to the point of indifference, and how do you get there? And everyone's got their own thing that sticks them back to that narcissistic person. And I think what you're saying there about not feeling, you had one direction, which was you just went into something else. It's law of attraction stuff. You went, and for me, it was very similar, but it was that I dissociate so well and I get really logical. And I can talk my way through any emotion. I can tell you the story of my life without batting an eyelash, you know, like it's,
yeah.
And it's a really incredible skill. It's what helps me when I talk to people, because I don't have to have my own emotional reaction to their pain. Right. Yeah. but then for myself in healing, I had more than one person tell me, at least you just got to feel, you got to feel. And then I had someone point in my face and say, you disassociate too much. Stop it. But it was true. And it wasn't, you know what though? It wasn't that big a deal once I started feeling.
Right. Right. And that's the thing. You were lucky that you had people in your life doing that for you.
Yeah. Right.
Because I did not.
Right. Right.
My people were telling me, shut up, get over it. Because the first night, like when I left my ex-husband, the first night, I cried and 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 cried. And I was also required to go to this stupid bowling party that night with a bunch of couples.
Oh,
terrible thing to do to a person. And then I was told, you know, these are the choices that you have made. You need to get over yourself. It was the first night.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Nice. Yeah. No,
Just an example of, boy, I tell you, I need to, anyway. So point being though, that was important. That person was wrong, and I should have stopped to feel my emotions. And it can't just be, you know, it's not always just going to be one day of crying. You might have a lot more to do than that. So, And then, you know, there's a whole process of it, but I think what we're going to try to maybe pick up on a little bit today, maybe you can kind of help pitch in on this, but when you're feeling like, okay, I'm stuck. And even though I've been working on it for so long, I still don't want to let go. Like, how do we get past that point? So let's maybe talk about that a little bit. So what are your, do you have thoughts on that? Or do you want to,
how to get past the point when you feel stuck and you
want to, like, what is a good way for, in your mind, to sort of change things up so you can shift and move in the right direction?
I had to get interested in other things.
Yes.
You know, it's sort of like I had to say enough. I have enough knowledge. I have enough understanding. It is not doing me any good to think about any narcissist on this planet. I need to be able to find them and spot them and point them out, but I don't need to keep going back there. All of my reading, all of my research, all of my Facebook groups, you need other interests. So what I did is I did half time this, half time other stuff. Like if I was reading one book on narcissism, I was reading another book on something completely different, lighthearted,
That's good.
Right. That helped. I think each person's different. So I don't know. What are you thinking on this?
Well, I think you made some really great points. And I think when you are, for me anyway, I think being in, so for me, I think it starts with giving yourself, like I said, some time to feel what you feel. And, you know, even if you have to kind of like shut the world out for a weekend or a week or whatever, let it happen, you know, cry, throw things, break stuff, whatever you need to do. But then, you know, I find journaling, I think you may have mentioned journaling, to be really helpful. I do see the value in learning about, okay, this helped me a lot, actually. I think I mentioned this last week, but just being able to go, okay, to learn about narcissism, to be able to label the behaviors was huge for me. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, that's gaslighting. Okay, that's projection. That's this, that's that. And then I was able to, I think what helped me the most was being able to look at it from a scientific perspective, right. Sort of, you know, and not, and again, here we go again, putting my emotions on the back burner, helped me in the moment to, once I understood logically, you know, then I could roll back and go, okay, now let me connect the emotions. I feel not good enough. And so, but the reason I feel not good enough is because this person has this psychology and this caused them to do this to me. You see what I'm saying? Like, yeah. So if I could look at it like that and then connect the emotions to the facts, I found that to be very effective.
Sounds like they gave you separation between who you are and who they are.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Because that's what it comes down to. And I think a lot of us don't realize we look at ourselves and we go, there's all these things wrong with me. And, you know, cause nobody's perfect. We could all probably list 1,000 flaws we have. Right. But the fact is that, you know, even if somebody has a perfect body, there's something else wrong with them. Even if somebody has a perfect face, there's something, you know, and perfect, whatever, there's always something wrong with everybody physically or otherwise. There's, and I don't mean wrong. I mean, different than standard. Right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I think one of the things that helped me was, like you said, to separate. I think another thing that helped me was to be able to recognize that, in fact, even though I don't have all the perfect things, mm-hmm. even though I'm too short and a little thick and whatever else, and my hair is not straight, and I try to make it straight, but not lately because, you know, I've got that curly stuff.
Oh, is it good?
It's getting there. Really damaged. Anyway. All that stuff, all the things I wish that, you know, I wished at one point, I had to learn unconditional self-acceptance and realize that it's okay to be whatever I am and to be the best, whatever that is, I can be, you know what I'm saying? And that was helpful. And recognizing that, in fact, I'm not the big turd that they said I was. And whatever, you know, just recognizing my personal value. You know, and then also recognizing that my personal value was not connected to that person's opinion of me.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, but it's a process because it's so pervasive, this type of abuse. It's so, it goes so deep. And it's sometimes even the grandiose types can be covert in their abuse sometimes.
Well, right? Yeah. And when you keep saying they in your head, they said this, they did that. Why did they think that? Why did they do this? Then you're not working on you. And the point of healing is you're healing you. You're not trying to heal that relationship anymore.
That's so right.
Understanding them. Absolutely. Trying to get in their head and know why they think the way they think, every little detail of everything that happened to you, not necessary.
Exactly.
The acceptance that you said, did you say radical acceptance of yourself?
Yeah, well, I called it unconditional
self-acceptance. Unconditional self-acceptance. Yeah. We also have to have unconditional acceptance that they are how they are.
That's absolutely right. That's right. Yeah. And it's so hard because even though we're sitting here telling you things that you probably have experienced, and whether it's today or a different day that we've talked to you, the rest of the community here, I think the other thing that we have to understand is that we each have a different narcissist, right? So even though they're all so textbook and so similar, each one of them is still technically human as far as I know.
Right.
Technically, meaning they're going to have a different, you know, you might have a slightly different experience here and there. Mm-hmm. And so that, I think, you know, because like my ex was super into his dead mom, which I know sounds horrible to say, but he was like, it was almost like she had been idolized. And
I've seen that.
I never met her, you know, and it was just strange. But it was hard for me to wrap my head around the idea that somebody who seems so sweet in this way could be so toxic in other ways. That makes sense. You know?
Right.
And it was maybe less sweet than I thought too. You know what I mean? But at the time I was not even.
At the time it's sweet and suddenly it's creepy. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, but that's just one example, but I'm just saying like, there's always something, you know, and they seem so human at times.
Right. Oh yeah.
And that's the false, you know, like we talked about like false empathy or the cognitive empathy. Like they understand logically, what you feel and how to react to it sometimes, but they don't care. And that's the problem, because we think, well, you know, they understand that I'm sad because, you know, this thing happened, and it doesn't connect, you know, they're not, doesn't benefit them to understand that. So they must not be a narcissist. Let's say, you know, your friend at work broke their leg, I don't know, in some tragic way, and they can't come to work for a month. And now you're sad, and your person goes, you know, that must really suck. Sorry about that. Because they must be in a good mood that day or whatever. They appear to show some empathy.
They know the words to say, right?
Right. They know the words to say. So then you go, wait a minute. Is it that this person isn't a narcissist? Oh, and then even better, when they do the flip thing on you and they call you the narcissist because of, you know, whatever. So there's so much self-doubt, I think, is my point for a lot of people when they start to look at these relationships and try to figure out, well, maybe it's really me, or maybe this person isn't a narcissist. And this is something that I've talked about
all the time. Yeah.
Right. A lot. But what it comes down to is that even if they're not a diagnosed narcissist, even if they are, even if they're something else entirely, it doesn't matter, because what really matters is if they're toxic for you in your life. Right. And so ask yourself, if I'm around this person, you know, what percentage of the time do I walk away from this person feeling as good or better than I walked up to them feeling? Do you know what I mean?
I do. And I would say, like, the majority of the people I talk to, I can't say everyone, cause I don't know everyone's exact story, right? But the majority of people I talk to, they, what was I going to say? You said that the person, oh my gosh, here I go. I lost my thought, cause I was totally listening to you. it was a good one. It was, you said that what did you just say? You're talking about, never mind. Let's just move on. It'll come to me. I'll go, oh,
okay. Did you get it?
Oh, letting go. It is not, you aren't the cause of the abuse, of the manipulation, toxicity coming towards you.
Right.
And every person is, just like every narcissist is a human being. So, with quotes, we are also human beings and we're all different. And so they're going to treat us differently. So it's going to look differently, and it's going to have that same narcissist will have a different approach with different people because they're reacting to the person in front of them. So if they're with someone like Angie or I, and we're thinking through our feelings, they can hit us differently.
Yes.
They can manipulate us through confusing our logic. If you're a feeler, a big giant feeler where you are feeling all the time, they're going to hit you in your feelings. And so it's going to look like a totally different thing when you see it. Understanding that, you can see that it is manipulation.
Yeah.
It isn't something you're doing that caused, like, you can't fix it by changing who you are. You're not, no need to be better for them. There's only a need to be better for yourself if that's what you feel.
That's right. And that's something that I struggled with a lot too. Go ahead. Did I interrupt you? I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Okay. One of the things that I struggled with myself was because my ex was so good at telling me all the things that were wrong with me all the time.
Right.
for a long time, I just tried to change myself for him.
Yep.
And I did a lot of changing, stupid stuff. Some stuff maybe I needed to change, and some stuff maybe I shouldn't have changed, but it doesn't matter. The point is that it's one of the ways that they keep you around longer, I think, is if you're someone like me, maybe like you, I'm always like, well, what can I do next to be better in my life? Like, what's the next project I'm going to work on? What's the next thing I can learn? Always. And so if it happens to be, you know, if they say, like, I mean, it's just a good thing that I need to stop. All right. We're just going to jump in the chat. Do you have anything else to share before we do that?
Real quick, I wanted to ask you what you think. And then talk a little bit together about people who are the big feelers and their inability to let go because they can't get out of how they feel about the situation, how they feel inside.
That's a really good question. So what I've seen people do and have some success with, and this is hard. Sometimes you do need a buddy or even a coach to help you. Mm-hmm. But what I've seen people do is, like, for example, one person I know was always contacting her person on Snapchat. That was their place to talk. And so she just deleted Snapchat out of her phone, you know, and that was the first step for her. And so what I guess I'm saying is there could be a significant tiny action you could take, something that might take you just a minute, like that, deleting your Snapchat or changing your phone number, or, you know, some way that you can make it a little bit harder for you to contact them and them to contact you. This person also deleted all of his contact information out of her phone. And so she doesn't have it anymore.
I'm hearing is that getting the exposure
reducing exposure
is super important for people who are big feelers.
Very much. Yep. Mm-hmm. And then also staying busy has been, mm-hmm. you know, and some people for me with the way that their ability, like this one friend I was mentioning to you, will sit, like I said, going through it right now, will literally just sit for hours with no sound, no phone, no nothing.
In the silence.
In silence, I cannot do that. I would be insane because my head would be all over the place. Right. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But for me, I found, you know, distracting myself with things that made me feel validated was really helpful.
Right. Right. So take those emotions, because if you know you're a big feeler, then taking that strength of yours, which is to feel really big and to have all these emotions, and deliberately putting it on something that makes you feel better rather than focusing on the things that make you feel bad at a certain point. And I'm not talking early on. I'm talking 6 months and beyond after you've gone no contact or as close as you can.
Yeah.
So that your influences are better.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'll have people try a project. So maybe they will, I'm going to redecorate my bedroom, or I'm going to redecorate this room or whatever, or they will decide they're going to, you know, dance every day for 6 months and record it on TikTok or whatever, you know what I mean? Or a project, you know? And then sometimes people will do a creative thing. Like they will learn how to paint, or they will start writing, or they will, you know, there's so many different ways that you can find validation. So this is a really great time to explore what are you passionate about? What is exciting for you? You know, we have at queenbeing.com a free, I call it a passion planner just because I was trying to go for alliteration, but basically it's a passion finder. It helps you figure out, you know, what you're into and what you like, because this is so important for survivors to do at some point in their recovery. Because a lot of times, at least in my experience, my ex completely, I stopped doing all the things I love to do.
It's hard enough in a good relationship to continue doing the things that are you.
Right.
and it's really hard when you're having to manage down the whole time so that you're not having the manipulations and attacks.
Exactly. Yeah.
But it sounds like that would also go back to the beginning of what we were talking about, is when people feel like they've lost themselves.
Exactly. Yeah. It all comes together.
It does. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so if people want that, they can go to queenbeing.com/passion, PASSION, and pick that up. But yeah, that's something that I definitely think is important. And then sometimes I will suggest meetup.com. I mean, Dana and I have talked about that a lot here, but meetup.com is a good thing. Now, what I have realized is that for people in rural areas, it ain't that great. But then you can look at churches, or you can look at local community centers or other types of groups around you for volunteer opportunities, or even just social groups that you can join, book clubs, things like that. Of course, we have all the support groups for SPAN, for support for people affected by narcissistic abuse in relationships, SPANally. Those are the Queen Being sponsored support groups on and off Facebook. So we have those. And those are a good place to start, but they're not the place to stay forever. I mean, we would love to have you forever, don't misunderstand, but we want you also to branch out.
We don't want you to need it forever.
branch out. It's important to meet people in real life, and I'm not talking about for romantic purposes, especially not at first. But we've become so isolated, right, by these people, and that's part of the other reason I think it's hard, because they become our family and our community all, you know, because they take everything else from us, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. I think that is, yeah. I was like, I'm just going to talk.
A little cough. It's fine. So there's Chris. Hey, Chris. So it's an interesting thing that happens. So where were we? Let's see here. Okay. We have a lot of people in the chat today. Hey, everybody. Ronnie, Chris, Zemipo. I don't know if I said it right. I hope it did. Claire. Okay. Let's see. Jack, thank you for being here. I don't see Helpful Mom. Okay. Is it Isless or Eyeless from Kelly? Hey, said I did overstay my welcome with my ex. I mean, I think we all did.
Yeah.
I think the truth is that the narcissists are really only good for the first, until the love bombing ends, mostly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's the intermittent reinforcement after that, of course. That's what it is that keeps us hooked, by the way.
Yes, it is. Yeah. And we get addicted to it, and then we don't know how to create that same chemical brain. Well, yeah. Real quick before we go on.
Yeah.
Understanding what is going on in your brain can help a lot. And yes. There's lots of video. We have done them. I've done them. Angie's done them. Talked about this a lot. So yeah. Looking up what happens when you're trauma bonded and understanding what happens in the brain. Yeah. So that you can then, like, I can remember saying, okay, so this is a dopamine chase. What do yeah. I do to get my dopamine then? Because I don't really want to become a gambler. And I don't really want to, you know, like, what is healthy? How do you do this in a healthy way? And it's going to be individual and like what, and it's kind of what we're talking about, finding your interest.
Finding things that make you feel good.
Finding things to seek out. Like, even if, like, I remember going on a little hunt for a specific lamp, you know, like, and it was like, I'm not going to be shopaholic. I just want this one lamp. And it was like, I wanted some vintage thing. Right. So it was, you had to hunt it down and it kind of distracted. You know, enough to get through a day or two. And
that's exactly what it is. Uh-huh. And that's a good point you made there. I've done those kinds of hunts myself.
Yeah. But yeah. They give you that, they give you that dopamine seeking thing that happens when we're seeking, when we're chasing the carrot.
Yes. Yes. And then what's the other thing too? So things like music, like, can help. And you know, polyvagal theory suggests that we're all, that it's all connected to the vagus nerve system anyway, or the vagus nerve. Anyway, and the point is this, that nerve is connected to every major organ in your body, but little tiny things can help with that. Like taking a cold shower, splashing cold water on your face, or singing, humming, you know, so combined with just the feeling the music gives you on top of it, like, here's my suggestion to you. Drive in your car somewhere and sing at the top of your lungs.
Yep.
Seriously, that is one of the most therapeutic things I do to this day, still to this day. So if you all ever see me at a stoplight, just expect I'm singing.
Oh, me too. Yeah.
It's a concert.
All the time.
Well, you can actually sing. There's a difference.
I don't know that you can't. So there we go.
We'll karaoke sometime.
Okay.
Anyway. Okay. So let's see here. Jazz, I'm going to call you Jazz Znebo because I'm not sure if Znebo is correct. I don't want to say it wrong. Says, I can't stop being angry as I find more lies and manipulation. I'm out and I want to stop caring. I completely relate to how you feel, and I understand the frustration in that. Maybe one of the ways that you can look at it is to recognize that, number one, if you're out, the lies and manipulation are over. And so whatever happened, happened. And absolutely, I understand wanting to know. For me, it helped me to propel forward. Mm-hmm. But once you're fully out and free and clear, that's when it's time to write the letter. If you're feeling like this, in my opinion. And what I mean is you sit down and you write, I've done a whole video on this. I'm not going to go in the whole thing, but basically you write a letter. You say everything you want to say to that person that you never got to say. You tell them all the ways they hurt you and all the things they screwed you out of and all the ways they made your life terrible. And then how angry you are and how sad and how hurt and all the things that you want to say, but they'll never hear, even if you say. And then if you need to mail it, you can. Lise did. I didn't.
You get a different reaction when you do.
I want you to tell them about that. But first I want to say I burned mine and it helped me. I was done after I did it, but tell us if you don't mind.
Well, okay. There's two things. I don't suggest doing it. I don't suggest sending it. The reason I did it was really specific to the specific person I was dealing with. And I knew that I needed to burn the bridge because I knew the hoovering. I already knew what would happen. And I believe 100% in the Hoover. So meaning I knew it would come, and I knew because he was classic, you know, he's let's just be friends. I'm so sorry it couldn't work out because we had different interests.
He was like, I'm interested in having sex with other people. And
I'm interested in just manipulating and controlling you, and you're not interested in that. I don't understand.
Different interests.
He told me before, he said, as long as you don't cross the line, you will always have me in your life. And so I thought, where's the line? And I crossed it, and I did it on. And so it wasn't mean. It wasn't critical. It was to the point in his own language. He spoke in a very mechanical kind of, I don't know, ISTJ kind of language. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Not that they're all bad, but when they're narcissists, they're yeah. Anyway, and then I sent it, and then I got back. Are you insane? Are you okay? Do I need to call the authorities? Are the children safe? Are you safe?
Gaslighting everybody.
And nothing in there sounded, if I read it to you, it's so logical. It's almost void of emotion. It's very polite. It was very, very, it was not like you would, like, it wasn't dumping. Okay. Right. So imagine if you're writing from your heart, mm-hmm. and you send that, you're going to have your heart told you're wrong. They're going to be invalidated. You're going to be told you're crazy. You're going to, yeah.
With that being said, I found myself, so what I did in my case is I wrote the letter first. And this, by the way, when I came up with this tactic, I was 19 years old, way before some of these people out here were even born. But anyway, I'm old, everybody. Hello. So my point is, it was something that I, you guys are going to think I'm crazy, but I'm going to tell you anyway. I was feeling very angry at a person who had abused me in my life. And I heard a whisper in my ear, physical whisper, although I was fully alone in the apartment. I heard, "You have to forgive him." And I was so pissed off at this whisper. So anyway, I've told this before. But anyway, that was the thing. And so I tried to figure out, well, how am I going to forgive him? Because I'm definitely never talking to him again.
Right.
So, you know, and since I was 19 years old, this was before your average person had a cell phone. There were bag phones and car phones, I think, at that point.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, point being that I wrote the letter with every intention of sending it when I first wrote it. And then I realized how very long and crazy it sounded, because I said all the things, all the cuss words and mean things I wanted to say. So then I edited and rewrote by hand the letter. Then I was going to send it. But then by the time I had done all of that, I didn't need to send it.
Yeah.
I realized I had forgiven that person, but I wasn't going to be stupid enough to let them back in my life, obviously, you know? So I burned the letter, and that was sort of symbolic and helpful. And I've seen a lot of people using this tactic, some of which admit that I taught it to them. Anyway, but I gotta stop being a weirdo. I'm such a weirdo. Okay. Point is that I'm going to jump into the questions.
Anger.
You have anything else to say? Go ahead.
No, I think that's it. I think it's going to be different for everyone how they let go of anger, or how they use the anger to process what they need to process. Because anger is not a bad thing. It's just you don't want to be there for too long.
Yeah. In fact, it's a good thing when you need it.
When you need it, absolutely.
Yeah. It's your protector. Because it does propel you forward. Yeah. Or you can use it that way. But see, so there are times when I will tell someone, honey, you need to get angry, because they feel so stuck and they feel so bad.
Right.
They're also sad about whatever they've gone through. But then once the anger stops being productive and it starts to become toxic to your life, which happened to me when I was 19, this was not my husband. This was just a really bad roommate situation that it started, you know, where this happened. But at 19, you know, I was still a teenager and not a grown up yet, even though I was legally an adult. Why was I telling you that?
Anger and not letting go of it.
Yeah. But even then, like, I had really gotten my life together. Things were moving in the right direction. I had my new place. I was happy, la, la, la. And then I couldn't stop being angry. Mm-hmm. And when I realized that, and I kept like just crying out to the universe, like, how do I let go of this? I don't want to feel this way. It feels yucky. It feels gross and toxic. And that's when the whisper came. And that's what I did, and it worked. But it's different, like you said, it's different for everybody. You may need to do more than that. But I do these things with clients sometimes, these grief weekends, we call them, or something like that. It doesn't matter anyway, where we will go through certain steps and certain like a process together over the course of 2 or 3 days. And sometimes up to a week, depending on their schedule and whatnot, where we talk, you know, 4 to 6 times a day for short periods of time. And each time I give them an assignment and then they mm-hmm. go do the thing and then they come back. And so there's this whole process to go through and mm-hmm. kind of speeds up the process for you a little bit.
Yeah.
And everyone that I've done it with has said it was really powerful and helpful for them. And so mm-hmm. it's something, you know, I'm actually, well, I'll tell you more about that later, but there's something and we'll talk later. Okay, here we go. Okay. So C says it's been three. Okay. Wait a minute. Claire says he was obsessed with me. I couldn't get rid of him. And now it's like the tables have turned. So that's another, and in that case, you might be looking at him playing a game with you, or you might be looking at a new supply in the house. I mean, I don't mean the physical house. I mean, in his life.
Right.
Any thoughts on that?
Well, that he set up the attention giving,
mm-hmm.
unwanted attention giving, but your brain doesn't distinguish between good and bad in that case. It just knows attention. And then, so then when you're not getting it, it leaves you waiting for more, which is the same thing as the love bomb and devalue cycle. It's the same. It's the reason we get trauma bonded.
Yeah.
So if the tables have turned, then it's time to deliberately direct your attention to other things.
Yep. And, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it is, and that's where you're, that feeling, missing that attention, missing that part of him. Because I mean, let's just be really straight up. We all secretly on some level might have enjoyed at one point in our lives someone acting like they were a little obsessed. I don't mean crazy obsessed, I mean love obsessed, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it certainly would. You would certainly miss it mm-hmm. if it went mm-hmm. away.
Right.
Which is totally understandable. But yeah, when they pull away the attention, it certainly does feel even more devastating on some level.
It feels like there's a void. And even though it's a good void,
right.
We need to fill the void. And we often will turn our attention back to, well, why aren't they hoovering anymore? Now I need them to pay attention to me. And
right.
And it's not because we want to be doing that.
Right.
Right.
Right. Well, and on that same token, you know, that's part of the whole addiction thing in general, like because of the fact that, you know, even healthy love affects the same part of our brain as drug addiction.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. Uh-huh. And so this kind of love, I think it's 10 times worse. And because it is so encompassing, right? Like, I think a healthy relationship allows for both partners to have their own interests and to spend time separately as well as together. And these relationships often don't. I mean, not every narcissist is so obsessed. I mean, some narcissists, they're all obsessed in different ways, but some of them don't want all of your time, but some of them do. Mm-hmm. and many of them do it, or they want you to just at least be sitting and doing nothing when they're not there. And so they control you.
Oh right? Yeah. That in particular. Oh yeah. You don't, I used to think, feel like a wind up doll
where
you're just sitting, waiting on the shelf until they come turn the crank on your back. And that's what you're mm-hmm. supposed to do. And when you do anything else, they'll do something more to make the time even harder.
Yeah.
So
I've made a very similar analogy. I used to say I was like a doll on the closet shelf.
Yep.
You know, same thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's crazy. Let's see here. Okay. Rhonda says, that's it for me. He's so intelligent. It's hard to believe the reality of it's not what I thought it was. And that is just absolutely spot on for me too. I was blown away. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It was crazy. I get that.
I just did a whole video, like it was a week ago, about it's not what I thought it was. Was it a lie? So that there's a lot of info over there. But that's, we have to accept the reality of you have to look at the actions.
Yes.
And not just an action once in a while, or not just an action when someone's cranky or needs to eat.
Yeah.
But looking at the actions over time, that's why it takes a long time to spot red flags in new relationships, because you got to see it over time and you got to watch the actions.
Right.
Because and then,
there are, yeah, go yeah. ahead.
No, oh, but and then you have to accept that that is what that person is. I'm going to mute and let my dog out.
You said, okay, go ahead. Yeah. It's definitely something that, it throws people for quite a loop. Oh, yeah. C says it's been 3 years since I left him, and C is saying thank you for for my videos. Okay. So wait a minute. I already said that. Okay. Oh, intelligence. Yeah. Okay. Jazz says, I think that where I'm dealing with, how could I have believed that they wouldn't treat me like this? Oh, sure. Sure.
How could I believe they wouldn't treat me like, what do you
mean? Yeah. Like, how could I fall for this crap? Basically.
Oh, yeah.
That feels very familiar to me because mm-hmm. that's the thing. I'm really good.
Groomed. Well, you're groomed, right? You're groomed. You're groomed slowly. It's not like you're not dropped into it out of
right. You would. You don't walk in and they're like, okay.
Yeah.
Right. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, it's not like falling. You know, I always think of Alice going to Wonderland. Like, you didn't just fall off of normal world into crazy world.
Right.
You very, very slowly got led there.
Right. And right.
During the grooming time and the grooming process and with the love bomb devalue cycle, you're trained to believe it's your fault. All the things we were talking about earlier, all the things we believe about ourselves. And then by the time you're there and you believe it, believe all the things that are happening. That's how it happens.
Like, no doubt.
We're not stupid people.
Right. Right. You know? That's the thing. I'll tell you something. Not one single client, not one single person I've met on YouTube or Facebook or anything, always intelligent, attractive, relatively together people.
Yep.
Narcissists don't like scumbags, apparently. No. You know, and that's why it's so hard, I think, for a lot of us, because when we see them with a new person, I think it's our instinct to be like, that person sucks. Right. But we have to remember that that person is being given the same treatment that we had at the beginning.
Yes.
And so on some, right. So on some level, what did my narcissist, let's see. They told me about their terrible last relationship and how abusive and cheaty that person was.
Oh, he stabbed her with the scissors. She stabbed him. She didn't stab him. She threatened to stab him with scissors. I'm like, I think maybe she was actually just cutting something.
I mean, exactly. Exactly. Like, he walked in and the scissors were in the room. So yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's the thing. There's always, so you hear about the crazy ex, and then you hear about all the specific things about the crazy ex that they didn't like. And then what do? You go, oh, that person never did the dishes, and he was somehow traumatized by always having to do the dishes. You know, oh, I'll do the dishes all the time. You instantly, before you even know it, you're starting to be conditioned. But at the same time, they're telling you how much better you are than that person. And so, and how crazy and horrible that person was. So you feel protective of them, right? You're like, oh, poor you. Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. Let me be better than that person. Take better care, do better things for you. And so meanwhile, when that person, if that person has the nerve to come and tell you, honey, this guy's an abuser or this girl's an abuser, you're going to be like, whatever, you're just crazy and you're mad because they're not with you anymore. I know you're obsessed.
Right.
Okay. So this same thing is going to happen when you are the ex, right? They're going to go to the new person. They're going to tell them all the same things and they're going to do all the same crap. And that person's going to think you're crazy. Don't even bother to try to tell that person. The only thing you can ever tell that person, in my opinion, or you should ever tell them, is if you get a chance to do so carefully, then be like, hey, call me if you need anything. Have any questions? Not going to work. Don't do that. But I'm all over the place today. I'm so sorry.
You're good.
All of those
Yeah. It's all the things. Yeah.
All the things. Okay. Here we go. Did I get off? Did I forget to answer something, or did I say the thing I was supposed to?
I think you said it.
Okay. All right. Let's see here. Okay. The isolation factor, right? Mm. So Rhonda's talking about the isolation factor. So this is the thing about that. And this is part of the way that they keep us stuck also. Because during your relationship, there's a pretty good chance that they will push at least one person out of your life, if not all the people, right? Mm-hmm. In my case, they pushed everyone away from me on some level, everyone. I walked away with almost no one left. And that's messed up. but that's what happens. And so if you know, you can be sad about it, or you can take action to start to change it. If there are people that
if you want to change it.
Yeah.
There's no other way. Yeah.
Right. There are people who will still come back and be in your life. And then maybe there are new people that you'll bring into your life, but it's really important to try to branch out as soon as possible when you're ready to, like, especially like you said, Lise, when you're at least that 6 month mark or whatever, to try to start to move forward in that way.
You're not going to feel like you want to do it. There's the thing. You're not going to feel like you want to.
It's right.
You wait around for your emotions to tell you it's a good time to go do something. You're not going to, it's going to be years for a lot of people. There's a few case, a few points in this healing where I tell people, this is a fake it till you make it moment. I hate yes. that phrase. I hate that mentality for most things. But right. when it comes to like taking action towards something that betters your life, it mm-hmm. really is. Because if you wait to feel good to go get that new job, if you wait to feel good to go make friends,
yeah,
you're going to be sitting a long time.
That's right.
But the act of going out and trying things and doing things will start yeah. to, will start to help your brain heal, which also, and you're creating new neural pathways and you're doing things to improve your life, which will then help this healing. And then you won't be so isolated. In the very exactly. least, you had a boring time with boring people.
That's right.
Right.
yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can meet people anywhere. Like yes. just recently I took my kid to the swimming pool in town. And I met a new friend and we yeah. just had lunch today. That was great.
Yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
So like, yeah. So it doesn't always have to be traditional stuff. And like, if you are, by the way, just a little tip from me to all of you, if you're in a less rural area, there is something called Bumble BFF.
Oh yeah.
And I've heard some good things from some people mm-hmm. where it's a platonic friendship connector, like a dating app, but for friends. So, and I don't know, I can't vouch for it personally. I can just tell you that I've had several clients try it and do well with it, except for the one client that I had tried that didn't do well with it. She was in a very rural area and she was maybe a little older than us, than Lisa and I. So, maybe 20 years. So maybe that was part of it. Cause maybe
yeah, her, there weren't enough people in her
age
demographic yet.
Right. Right. But yeah. Oh my goodness. Claire says, I got arrested when I tried kicking him out. How does that work? Well, that's, I'm guessing, projection and him probably smear campaigning. Actually, one, you know, if you guys know Tracy Malone on YouTube, her and her narcissistic ex's mistress, Lizette, they actually found out about each other and they ended up, well, they both thought they were the primary. I shouldn't even call Lizette the mistress because they one was in Australia, one was here in the United States.
They didn't know, yeah.
And I interviewed them. It's on my channel somewhere years ago about their, what happened. And it's all Tracy got arrested. That's how she met Lizette. It's a really interesting story.
Wow.
Anyway, yeah. So I've seen that and heard of that happening more than once. That's mm-hmm. just about the only one I've officially interviewed about. But yeah, that does happen. And Claire, I would be interested in hearing your story, but I'm sure it's probably a case of lying and projection and smear campaign.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. Yeah. And I've heard of like the narcissist getting a protective order, similar mm-hmm. type of thing, not quite as extreme, but similar. And how is that even possible? Well, lying, projecting.
So exactly.
And that's why it's important when you leave them. When the discard happens to disengage from the text, because they can take your string of text, they can crop their stuff out and make you look completely insane, take it to the police and say, I'm being stalked.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. And there are so many things. Yeah. That's a good point. And so this is the other side of it too, is the flying monkeys of it all. Right.
Oh, yeah.
In that case, certainly somebody like somebody's mother. Here's another example I just saw in real life recently. Someone that my husband is related to is going through a thing, and they, one of their family members came with them to get their stuff. And then this family member proceeded to, after the police left, because the police were there with them while they were getting the stuff, after the police left, they proceeded to tear out the flowers of the woman whose home it was. And there was no negativity from the woman. She was perfectly respectful. And I couldn't believe it. But this was not even the person she broke up with. It was a relative of this person. You know what I mean? So like,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that's about. but it's craziness. So it's a flying monkey thing, because this person believes so strongly that her relative was wronged that she felt personally offended by it. And this mm-hmm. is not a bad person. It's a really good person who did this act. You know what I mean? And so I feel like narcissists, and I'm not even saying the guy was a narcissist, by the way, I'm simply saying some bad stuff happened and this weird thing happened. And so in this case, someone else's emotions were used against this. I don't know. It's point is flying monkeys are messy and narcissistic breakups. So they complicate and compound stuff. Right. Okay. Peggy says, this is a little different, but is it really hard to get out from under basically narcissism, maybe psychopathy? It is really hard. Not is it? It is really hard. Maybe a combination of staying strong, but geez, it's hard. Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's very hard. Mm-hmm. I think that most of us are probably dealing with, at the very least, malignant narcissists. But I have clients who have, I've seen all the way up to psychopath, and not, you know, psychopaths don't have to be murderers or killers. No. You know what I mean?
They're just really crafty. A lot of times, really good at it.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they're so manipulative, and, you know, it scares me, honestly, how many are probably sitting out there acting like normal people and not
being sociopaths as well. Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. It's absolutely, it's a similar.
They don't all end up in jail. They don't all commit crimes.
Right.
Being sociopathic is not.
Right.
Especially the self-aware kind. People say, well, here's something people say a lot. Can a self-aware narcissist change? Like, no, that just makes them a psychopath, I think. Right?
So this is what people are going to start saying right now. So you know Sam Bachman, and you know H.G. Tudor and all those guys. And there are new guys from TikTok.
Oh, yeah. Because it gets them views.
Right. Right. It absolutely does. And people.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That being said, I will say this. This is my take on it. Like, whatever helps you, great. If those people help you, great. I do not personally endorse those people. Mm-hmm. But I'm not saying they're wrong or their research is wrong or anything. I'm just saying I don't endorse them. And you know that already, Lise. Mm-hmm. But what I do is I say, if somebody helps you, that's great. But just keep in mind who they are. Mm-hmm. If they're telling you they're a narcissist, sometimes I think that they're not really. Like, there's one guy who, and I'm not even going to say his name because I don't want to, like, mess with his brand or whatever. But one particular guy off the top of my head, I don't believe is a narcissist and says he's a narcissist. I don't believe it. I think that's just either he has been led to believe that by some toxic person in his life, or he is just doing it as a branding thing. But I do think, I know for sure Sam Bachman's one. I'll say that. Yeah. The point is, it doesn't matter. If they help you, if it helps you to listen to them, great. But if you become obsessed with them or you become overly attached to them, that's just going to further set you back.
All you're doing is transferring your attachment to your narcissist onto another narcissist then, in a safe one because they're not in your actual life.
Right.
But is it really safe? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's bad. It's bad. Yeah. Blue Moon makes a really good point. You keep hoping they'll change, but the problem is that you're the only one living in that fantasy. What a profound statement, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the truth. Yes. Oh, there's Helpful Mom. Hey, Helpful Mom. Okay. Yep. Chris says, right, 25 years later, and who am I? I know. C says, I was so stuck in ruminating what he said and trying to determine if it was true that I lost me. I get it. Yeah. And Blue Moon adds, you really need to look at reality. Yeah, that's 100%. I think we've all done the rumination thing. And I mean, mm-hmm. sometimes I still catch myself like thinking too much about things, right? Mm-hmm. Anything. But this has been a big, huge life changer for me. Maybe this will help you. When I have gone through situations where I can't stop thinking about things, it'll physically make me sick sometimes. Mm-hmm. So I ask myself, I say, can I control or affect this situation in any way, shape, or form? Can I do anything to make it better? If the answer is no, I have to stop. If the answer is yes, then I go, okay, am I willing to do that thing? You know, because if my problem is that I don't like the way my butt looks in a pair of jeans, can I fix that? Well, I could buy different jeans or go on a diet. Am I willing to do one of those things? Probably. Maybe not. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The point is, you have to accept yourself. And if yourself is not prepared to do something to make your butt look better in the jeans, then you just have to accept your butt the way it is. And that's a funny thing I'm talking about, butts and jeans, because that's nothing to do with narcissism. But the point remains, if you have a problem in your life and you don't like it, if you can change it, then do you want to change it? And are you willing to change it? If you can't change it, what are you going to do? You're going to sit around and let it make you sick for the rest of your life, or you're going to let it go and think about other things. And for me, it sounds so overly simplified, but it was a huge life changer for me to recognize that simple concept.
It is simple, though. It is, all of the ways toward healing are simple.
Yes.
It's just, they're not easy to do. It is hard. This is hard work. And
it's hard work.
I can remember someone saying, like, because I remember talking to a guy friend who's very, very, very logical. And he's really sweet, but really logical, you know. And he said, he's like, well, tell me about this. Tell me about that. And I was telling him about, you know, this about narcissism, that about narcissism, this about the narcissist, this about them. And they said this, so maybe it could be better if that, you know, doing the ruminating out loud.
Yeah.
And he said, it sounds like you're putting a lot of time trying to figure out somebody else's intentions. It's logical, right? And I said, yeah. I said, yeah, okay. I said, but don't you have to with anyone, you know, kind of, because that's like at a certain point, trust is, you know. And he said something, he goes, yeah, but it sounds like an experiment to see if they'll change. And I said, well, yeah, isn't it? I mean, we don't know. They say a narcissist can't change, but are they really a narcissist? Can they really change? So went on like that. And so the words that helped me, he said, when are you going to stop being a lab rat in your own life?
Yeah.
And take charge of the things you can change, which is your thinking about this person.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what you're saying. Like, do the change where you can, which is your own thought process, and not, are you frozen? No, you're not.
No, I'm just looking at a comment that's striking me.
Go for
strangely.
It. Go. No.
I'm listening. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Here we go. I've got one. I think we're going to do one last question.
Okay.
And because I think we're way over time and I apologize for
Probably.
That.
Probably. Yeah, we are. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Real quick. Hufflemom says, as a survivor of narcissistic abuse, how do you recognize certain behaviors like that are narcissistic fleas in the moment? And how do you stop yourself? So really quickly, I want to say this.
Or in someone else?
Well, she's saying in yourself.
Okay.
I think, I assume. And she says, as a survivor, how do you recognize? Oh, that's a good question. Let's do this. How do you feel about talking about this on Friday during our stream?
Okay. How do you recognizing fleas in yourself and others? Okay.
Yeah. All right. So Hufflemom, we'll fill you in on that on Friday a little more deeply.
Flea Friday. So that would,
Friday?
I said Flea Friday.
Flea Friday. Yes. We might as well. Yeah. So that'll be this Friday, right? Are we good for this Friday?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm good.
So this Friday, similar bat time, same bat channel. We'll be here. Okay. So yes. All right. So before we wrap up, let me just say thank you everybody for being here. Thank you for the admin team. I saw Hufflemom and Jack Lumen. I think those are the only two I saw. Did I see another mound today? Let me check. I don't know. I think not. Thank you guys for being here. I saw a lot of our amazing channel members. Thank you. Hey, Mystique. Saw a couple of clients in the house. Hey, y'all. And yeah, very cool. So everybody, we will see you next. Well, Lisa and I will be back on Friday to talk about the fleas, which are little habits and behaviors we might pick up from narcissists, especially when we're with them for a long time, and how we can recognize those and let go of them, and, you know, overcome them, stuff like that. In ourselves and maybe people around us, our kids, our family members who were also affected by narcissists, et cetera. And then we will, what else? Oh, and then Dana and I will be here on Tuesday. Dana's coming back, she said, on Tuesday. So very exciting stuff. Meanwhile, I'm gonna let Hufflemom put all of our information in the chat if she doesn't mind, as far as where you can text for your backup notifications. You can also hit the subscribe button and the bell notification here on this channel and over on Lisa's channel, which I think Hufflemom will also link in the chat here. I think that's all I have to say right now. Well, Lisa, anything that you want to add before we wrap up for today?
Have a good day. I think that's it. Yeah.
All right. This has been a good one. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And thanks everybody.
Bye.
Next Friday. All right. Bye. I mean, this Friday. Okay.